Hello and welcome to Root Causes, the PKI and security podcast, where two industry veterans talk about all kinds of things involving PKI, such as encryption, hashing algorithms, digital certificates, and stuff along those lines. This is episode 25. I am Tim Kellen, senior fellow at Sigtigo, and I am joined by Jason Sirocco, CTO of IoT at Sigtigo. How are you doing today, Jason?
Doing great, Tim. Thank you.
Doing great. And I talked about all these things that we talk about on this podcast. This time, we're going to talk about random numbers.
Yeah, randomness. Yes. Super important in the field of PKI and encryption. And
the short story, I think probably everyone understands, the short story of why random numbers are important is it puts unpredictability into your results. If people could understand how your hashes were generated, then they could go do their own and they could spoof the whole system. So some sort of randomness is a necessary component for all of this to work.
Yeah, uncertainty, randomness, chaos. Why is that a good thing? We're going to do a few analogies here today, Tim, because it gets into math real quick and you want to avoid doing that. So, you know, let's say you play the lottery. Okay. or you're forming a lottery and you're going to pick six numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you randomly pick those six numbers? That's really important to have a lot of chaos and uncertainty based on how those numbers are chosen. Because if there's some level of bias, let's say your numbers are between 1 and 50, and for 4 or 5 or 6 straight weeks, your numbers are skewed towards 50 more than 0. Wow, that gives an enormous advantage to the people playing your lottery.
Right.
And so therefore, you are taking advantage of that randomness. And typically that's done just by having, you know, ping pong balls that are rolling around seemingly in a completely random way. The problem is, of course, if the balls aren't completely weighted identically the same, that brings in bias. And again, this bias within randomness, this is the opposite of randomness. It creates bias.
Yeah, and bias doesn't imply certainty. Like, it's not like I have to say, I know that these are going to be the six numbers. But if I knew, for instance, that a certain number was more likely to come up or less likely to come up, even if it doesn't mean it's sure to come up, that bias is very important in terms of, in the case of the lottery, in terms of you would pick the numbers that are more likely to win and you would skew the odds in your favor. In terms of crypto, I think what you would do is you would pick the numbers or configurations that are more likely to be right, and you would reduce the necessary processing time to brute force attack a key.
That is the exact point, because the basis of all of the good encryption algorithms that are out there are based on you need to have a computer work through all the millions and billions and trillions of combinations.
Right.
And if you happen to know that a certain class of or a certain segment of those permutations are not necessary to scan, you've reduced the safety factor of your encryption in a massive way. Even though you haven't given away the answer, the ability to brute force that encryption rises exponentially.
And true randomness is hard, right? So you can get a random number generator app to put on your phone, and it will give you a number that's hard for you or me to predict what the next number is going to be. But that's probably not actually random, right? It's probably pseudo-random, and probably it's fine for me and my friends deciding who's going to go first in a board game, but it wouldn't be so fine to use that as the basis for some critical digital security system.
Right. So let's talk about entropy and information, because this is where this all came from. And there's a few things in the news recently we're going to touch on a little bit. This podcast is going to be a minor tribute to a person who's probably not talked about enough, and that's Claude Shannon. Claude E. Shannon, who back in 1948 wrote A Mathematical Theory of Communication. And his job back at Bell Labs was to basically deal with signal-to-noise ratio issues at Bell. So in other words, you're trying to put a signal modulating information across a wire, and there's a noise floor below which that information, you can't read it anymore. So he was an expert in really maximizing the amount of information going across a wire and pulling it out of the pulling it out of the noise. And it's the a lot of his work is the basis of a lot of very important concepts in computing. We wouldn't have the computers we have today running the way they do. We wouldn't have the PKI industry probably. All these important concepts of randomness that we just talked about, and how to how to measure entropy, how to measure randomness. That paper is the basis of a lot of it. So I want to reference that. And anybody who's interested in that really should check it out.
Okay, got it.
So let me tell you a study that Claude Shannon did. Okay. Nothing to do with computers. It's just to tell you why the word entropy sometimes has what seems like a double meaning, when in reality it's not. It has a lot to do with, again, that word information. And of course we use that word all the time, and sometimes we don't use it very precisely. But the precise meaning of information for Claude Shannon, here's an analogy to help explain it. So you and I right now, Tim, we're talking in the English language, and yes, we're conveying information to each other and to the listeners.
Yes.
And what's interesting is we're using a finite set of words. We're using certain words over and over again. Sometimes in different contexts, they have different meanings. The spellings of those words sometimes have makes a lot of distinction between what a word that might sound the same, but it's spelled differently. We happen to know that. There's some information there. So Claude Shannon actually did a study on languages to try to determine which languages had the highest amount of information flow. And English came out very high. And there's a reason for that, because if you take a look at, say, French or Russian, of which, you know, I have some familiarity, but not a lot. But French and Russian are interesting because they have the concept of genders for nouns. Genders for nouns, that's a cultural aspect. It's not an informational aspect. In other words, if you use a verb tense for a masculine or feminine noun, does that actually convey information? It actually doesn't. So
right,
low entropy languages. Russian's even worse. It actually has three genders. Go figure that one out. And additionally, one of the reasons why English doesn't score at the absolute top is because English has a lot of detritus in it. Again, culturally, like, for example, the word through has a whole lot of extra letters in there, right? Like, what's that GH doing in there? So the spelled out English language actually has some things about its information that are lower than, say, a perfect entropy. Something that would be the opposite of that and have the highest amount of entropy almost possible, think about the digits of pi, right? Okay. 3.14, and then every single digit after that has, it's a surprise. It's a new piece of information, right?
Yes.
So therefore, it's an extremely highly informational concept. Now, something that would be a low information would be, say, something like just a drum beat, right? Can you convey, you know, a sentence to me just with a simple downbeat, upbeat, downbeat, upbeat? There's only so much you can say in that. Morse code, on the other hand, right, has information. One of the highest forms of entropy, think about something like white noise. And this is where we'll circle back to bias. White noise is kind of perfect in a way, because if you start looking into the white noise, it's very, very difficult to predict what any of the given elements of white noise are going to be. So if it's just a time series, the amount of sound there is, or where it happens to be in frequency, it's very, very difficult to predict at any given moment in time what that value would be. However, if it's like audio engineers play with this stuff, but pink noise, concepts like that, that's when bias is introduced into the white noise.
Right.
So I think to get back to computing now, you know, Tim, we've seen examples in the Linux world and other places where there was, you know, it wasn't truly random, it was pseudo-random, and there was some kind of bias that was conceptually sort of the same as a pink noise, a bias within the random number generator in the operating system. A lot of people might not realize, but Linux, for example, uses just movements of the mouse, right? Other forms of input that are happening, it'll use those seemingly random or chaotic features to be able to derive randomness. Where we're actually finding some of the least amount of randomness, and where we're actually running into a lot of trouble, is in IoT. Okay. Some people are trying to generate certificates, you know, with some algorithm based off of inputs that are going on in a device. The problem is that a lot of these devices that don't have some sort of dedicated hardware random number generator, where's the entropy coming from? Where's the information? Where's the chaotic randomness coming from? And it's not coming from anywhere. It's an extremely closed off and homogeneous kind of environment, whereas each device probably was created exactly the same way, except for just a serial number. And that's not enough randomness. So Tim, I think before this podcast we were talking, you had a couple of good examples of where...
Right. So we see what happens when these things go wrong. So there have been some very high visibility examples. The first thing that comes to mind, of course, is 2008's Debian OpenSSL flaw. So the OpenSSL function in the Debian flavor of Linux had a somewhere along the line shipped with a problem, and basically the seed value was predictable. And as soon as people realized that that seed value is predictable, they immediately calculated like the first 100,000 values, right? So that you then had a list, right? And so you could go for anything that was created with OpenSSL. You could just go, and you knew it was, you know, if it was done in the first 100,000 values, and by the way, it's most likely to have been done in the first 1,000 values, then you could just go down this list. And so it basically made all of the certificates that had been where the CSR had been created in OpenSSL had predictable keys. And it was easy to find them because you just looked for certificates that had keys on this list. And it was big. There were tens of thousands of them. And so that sort of thing can happen where people don't realize, right? It looks like it's all working correctly and you think it's fine. And then it turns out that it's not actually random. Or another example was also in 2008, some security researchers managed to do a collision attack on a VeriSign off-brand certificate. It wasn't VeriSign branded, but it was from VeriSign. And part of the way that was possible is they detected a pattern in the serial numbers, which allowed them to predict the next serial number. It happened, it was a pretty easy pattern. It was increment by one. So that was pretty easy to figure out. And once they detected that pattern, it made it possible for them to predict that next serial number, therefore no randomness, right? No entropy. Entropy is collapsed down to a single value. And under those circumstances, like those were real world things with real world consequences because the ability to have genuine unpredictability was absent.
It's really key. I mean, a lot of developers, especially if they're inexperienced, we'll take a look at just, you know, the basic random number generator that is in a lot of languages or operating systems and think, hey, that must be really good. That must be really random.
Yeah. And it looks random to your eyes, right? Which doesn't mean it is random. Just the fact that the pattern isn't immediately and obviously detectable by a human eye with few data points is not the same as saying that there is no bias or there is no pattern or there is no way to predict what the next one's going to be.
Yeah, and the funny thing is about random functions is they're typically not used unless it's something important.
Right.
Right. You're not just playing around with it. You're typically either doing, you know, cryptography or, again, you know, in a non-computing sense, perhaps you're running a lottery. And in all these cases, there's something at stake typically when randomness is being used. So there's something in the news very recently, Tim. I just got to bring it up because it's interesting.
Yeah.
I think it was Cloudflare who formed the League of Entropy.
The League of Entropy.
Yeah. That's right. Which is great. So I don't know if everybody on this podcast listening is familiar, but there are entropy beacons out there, randomness beacons. And so therefore, again, just like a lot of things in cryptography, Tim, don't do it yourself, right? And
absolutely. Though Cloudflare does it themselves. They have a randomness beacon.
Yeah, absolutely. They work in conjunction. I think it's the University of Chile, which is interesting. And they have an entropy beacon. And really all this news event, I think it was June 17, was made public. All that's really happening is they're forming a consortium of these entropy or randomness beacons. So they're working together in conjunction. They're trying to get the word out about using their services.
Yeah.
So for those of you who need an entropy service or a randomness service, check these things out. They're pretty cool.
And a couple of these are cool. I got to just say. So Cloudflare has LavaRand. And what LavaRand is, is they have a camera pointed at a wall of lava lamps. And they are somehow using, they're converting the image that the digital camera is capturing from the continual chaotic, unpredictable movement of this whole wall full of lava ramps. They're somehow converting that into digital values, which you can imagine there's many ways you could do that. And those are phenomenally unpredictable, right? So that was that's a random number generator value. I also like UChili has something they call Seismic Girl. And Seismic Girl collects randomness from five sources, and they are as follows. Seismic measurements in Chile, right? So there's a Chile seismometer, and we know that's a very seismically actively place. A stream from a local radio station, a selection of Twitter posts, data from the Ethereum blockchain, and their own off-the-shelf RNG card. So wow. it's just a wonderful collection of things. And you can see how all of those getting mashed together is going to give you something that is truly, truly unpredictable.
Yeah. So again, don't do it yourself, because these are also people who've studied the math behind it. A lot of these things they're absolutely amusing to think about being used, but it kind of makes a lot of sense. A wall full of lava lamps doing their thing is going to be a heck of a lot more random than just say somebody moving a mouse around
exactly. And so those things are usable. Now, we have touched on this topic before, and I don't want to go over old material, but I do want to reference it. So in our episode 9, we talked about the 63 versus 64-bit serial number concern that occurred earlier this year in the world of public CAs. And that comes back to this was an entropy concern. The problem was that one of those bits turned out to be predictable, which cut the genuine entropy in half and sort of surprised people, and nobody was expecting it. And it got discovered incidentally as people were investigating other things. And so that's a perfect example of what we were talking about. You might think I'm hitting the button and I'm getting what looks like a random number, but it's not always actually a random number.
Goodness, even in terms of guessing at large prime numbers, there's some really amazing math out there that's using geometry to try to find non-randomness. In other words, turning randomness on its ear and actually being able to use geometry to find where in a large batch of numbers, prime numbers exist without having to have a computer just do the massive horsepower to try to calculate all of them.
Yeah.
So it's just smart math. And the need for absolutely real randomness is, I think the importance of it just gets more and more through time.
Yeah, and let me just reference also, we brushed on this topic when in our episode 6 on quantum-resistant cryptography. So that's another gun. If you enjoy this kind of thing and you're interested in numbers and randoms and what's the mathematics behind making crypto work, I do want to recommend go listen to that episode as well, because we get into much more depth on the quantum computing challenge in particular and how that needs to be addressed.
One of the reasons we bring up these, what might in isolation look like a very esoteric topic, in reality, these things make headlines.
Yeah.
And it's the basis of a very important part of the security industry. And it's good to at least have a cursory knowledge of what's going on.
Yeah. So great. I'm certain this will come up again. I think this was a wonderful introduction to the topic. And thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks. This is Root Causes.